Is there somewhere we can talk?
Did you notice the radio?
The radio? I thought just one night we could sit around and have some intelligent conversation.
Bradley J.
J-Talk.
Jay!
J-Talk.
Jay!
Jay!
Won't you talk to me tonight?
J-Talking with Bradley J.
Bradley J. Bradley J. Talk away.
You must take your radio with you.
Bradley J, till the day, all night, tonight, all right,
I'll be there. WBZ News Radio 1030.
BZ 50, actually 64 degrees. You are Jay Talking, I am Bradley J. You are live, Jay Talking, midnight to 5 each weeknight on WBZ. Producer Mark Lavallo produces the show and the podcast. Our first guest is Brian Bulldog Tilton. Hi, should I call you Bulldog?
You sure can.
All right, Bulldog. You are, it says here, passionate. Are you, in fact, passionate?
Absolutely.
It says you are a conservative. Is that true?
That is very true.
Former talk show host in Hooksett, New Hampshire?
Yep.
And budget committee member in New Hampshire?
Absolutely.
Okay.
From the town of Hooksett.
For the town of Hooksett. And you're here to talk about something that doesn't get talked about enough, and that is Northern Pass, otherwise known as what?
The big ugly scar.
The scar. You're a conservative, yet you are against this.
Yes.
Conservatives generally thought to be pro-business. This is a business venture.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you are against it.
So yes.
Why is that?
For several reasons, and it's very consistent for a conservative to be against this project because of the effects that it has on ordinary people, and property rights was one of the earliest concerns on this project when there were threats of eminent domain. And, you know, conservatives, as well as many liberals, opposed to that idea.
Well, let's talk, you know, we better back up and say what the project is to make sure everybody understands.
Sure.
What is this Northern Pass?
Well, this is a project that was proposed in 2010 by Public Service Company of New Hampshire, now doing business as Eversource. And Eversource, as you know, throughout much of New England, they proposed this project to bring power from Hydro-Quebec through 100, and now it's up to 192 miles of overhead transmission lines right through the heart of New Hampshire, right through the White Mountain National Forest, and defacing Interstate 93, which many people enjoy that beautiful drive up the highway through New Hampshire, and then plug into the New England power grid to send that power to markets in Massachusetts and Connecticut. And that project has taken a few different forms over the years. There's been three different versions of it, and each one seems to get longer, and the towers seem to get taller.
Who stands to gain and who stands to lose?
Who stands to gain would be the executives of Eversource and their investors. It's an investor-owned utility. And those who would lose would be those whose property values are affected by it, as well as the ratepayers who would be paying for this, particularly in Massachusetts and Connecticut.
And I suppose the entire state of New Hampshire, other than investors, would lose because tourism is number one in New Hampshire.
Yes, and for many parts of the North Country, in particular, the further north you go, the more dependent on tourism that economy is. And when you take that away, that just deprives everybody of an ability to earn a living. The first 40 miles of this project from the very beginning has been the big sticking point in this.
And first 40 miles, starting where? Where does it come in?
Through Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know, the northernmost town in New Hampshire.
Near Colebrook.
Yep, exactly. Colebrook is two towns below Pittsburgh. You have Pittsburgh, Stewartstown. Well, actually, Pittsburgh, Clarksville, Stewartstown, then Colebrook.
Okay.
And it was proposed to go through all three of those. Now they're trying to avoid Colebrook because there was a whole lot of opposition and various things happening.
So the squeaky wheel does kind of get paid attention to?
Well, that does help, yes, absolutely, plus the ability for people to say no to the project. They didn't sell their land to it. Instead, they took conservation easements on their land instead so that they couldn't get that project through. So then they tried to find this tiny little wedge to try and get around it on some town roads, which then becomes a whole nother issue, whether they can do that or
what's
not.
How does the conservation easement work?
Well, the conservation easement is administered through organizations like the Society for Protection of New Hampshire Forests, and many, many environmental groups will have conservation easements. So people will say, okay, I own this land, but I don't want to ever see it develop because when my time on this earth passes, I want to make sure that future generations get to enjoy this land. So you put a conservation easement on that land so that it's available for various uses that are set forth in that legal document. Generally, it's for open use for the public. Go snowmobiling through there.
Going to the heirs.
What about being passed down to their heirs? Is it sort of like a trust where there are limitations?
Not well. Again, it would be limitations on what they can do to that land. The land would still transfer to the heirs.
Oh,
but
okay.
Would you be able to develop that? No.
Okay. So that would affect the value of the property.
It could, you know, as far as potential developable,
right, which know, is fine, which is good, which
well,
is good that
again.
They don't care about that. That's fine, fine with me. And are those things, those conservation easements, in perpetuity?
I believe so.
I suppose you can.
They can
set
be
it up
changed.
For whatever you want.
Well, they can be changed later on. It all depends on how it's all negotiated.
But if you set it up for 20 years, it's probably enough to put the squash to this project.
Yeah, but I think these are probably in forever.
So. What it seems like to me is you have rich people trying to get richer at the expense of the citizens, just like always.
Yeah.
Sort of like the Olympics in Boston kind of thing, right? They're ready to kind of throw the community under the bus to make some money.
So, again, we're talking about a highly speculative business venture. And who is on the hook for it in the end? And it is the electricity ratepayers.
How does that work?
Well, it works in a number of different ways. What they get is they get a guaranteed rate of return. Most of these utility projects get anywhere from a 9% to 12.5%, 13% rate of return on their investment, which means the end user has to pay for that guaranteed rate of return. And what happens if that speculative business venture fails? The ratepayers get stuck with what's called stranded cost recovery. And this is the thing. In New Hampshire, our big argument was this is just a pass-through kind of thing. It's just that we're used as a doormat to deliver this power to southern New England, and the people in New Hampshire wouldn't get any of the power. So the utility company came up with this fanciful power purchase agreement. They said, okay, we'll get 9% of the power, and it'll be used for New Hampshire at these competitive rates, which they would never tell us what those rates are. They kept it secret.
Wow.
Yeah. And so what happened, the Public Utilities Commission recently ruled that this kind of power purchase agreement is illegal. It violates the competitive markets that were set up in New Hampshire by a guy I used to work for, actually, who is a state senator. And he created the whole electricity competition thing where you can choose who to buy your electricity from. And so this kind of a power purchase agreement, 20 years in this case, with between Public Service Company of New Hampshire doing business as Eversource and Hydro-Québec. And it was all set up so that if the wholesale market rates fall below what they purchase the power for, the ratepayers were going to get stuck with the bill through the stranded cost recovery mechanism. Now, stranded cost recovery, I'm not sure if it's on the people's bills in Massachusetts, but in New Hampshire, we have a line on our bill, and it was created back when the Seabrook fiasco occurred. So you have several lines in your bill. You have the electricity charge, you have your distribution charges, you have stranded cost recovery and system benefits charge. Which, by the way, those last two things don't appear on electric bills in many other states that I've been researching lately.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the stranded cost recovery could go up even further.
So that means if they don't make a profit, the ratepayer or the citizens have to make up the difference.
That's right.
And so it makes the state ugly. It ruins mm-hmm. the tourism. And there's at least a pretty good chance that there's going to be folks are going to be paying for something they didn't get. What is this? We'll break.
And it affects our property values.
Okay, we're going to break now, and you can tell me what the sentiment is in New Hampshire after this on WBZ.
I've got something to say.
Yes, Brad.
Jay talking.
Jay.
Bradley Jay. WBZ News Radio 1030.
Well, my name is Jay. I just wanted to call you.
We shall call Jay.
Telephones are not going to dial themselves.
Pick up that phone and speak the words.
Your own personal talk show.
It's a radio show host.
Someone who tries to be fair.
Bradley J. Jay Talking. WBZ.
Turn into a radio show.
Call 617-254-1030 to join in.
I speak Jay.
We shall call Jay.
WBZ, still 63 degrees. Not bad. Down 1 degree. Brian Bulldog Tilton is with us, who is a very good spokesperson against the Northern Pass project up in New Hampshire. And this is a transmission line project which would run high voltage power lines supported by huge, big, tall, ugly, 130-foot tall towers from Quebec through Franklin, New Hampshire, and Plymouth, New Hampshire, to Deerfield, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of reasons why it's bad.
And those tower heights, have we found out very recently, are going to be even taller. The tallest of the towers on this route would be in the southern portion of the state. One town, I live in Hooksett. The next town over from me is Allenstown. 155-foot tall towers to go through Bear Brook State Park. All right, you want to talk about the effects on conservation land?
Yeah.
44 conservation lands are to be impacted directly and indirectly by this proposal. And 155-foot, it still is not the tallest of the towers. 160 feet. Through Concord.
It's like as tall as radio towers, right? Some radio towers?
Some radio towers are about 200 feet, 400 feet,
depending
upon... We got one
out in the parking lot that's...
Oh, it's going to be taller than that.
Oh, well, okay.
Do you know the State House in Concord? You know how tall that is?
Yes.
Can see it from Interstate 93 when you're traveling north and south through there. It would be even taller than that.
Taller than the State
House. That's 130
feet.
That's
an insult.
It's an insult. Yeah. The people in Concord, the city of Concord itself... would stand the biggest visual impact of any town along the route, and that's saying a lot.
So where does it run through Concord?
It runs through the east end of Concord, and anybody who knows Interstate 393, it would cross right over that, cross over Loudoun Road, where there's some shopping plazas right around there. Yep, on the Heights, absolutely. And there's been some people in a condo complex called McKenna's Purchase, which have all banded together. You're talking a lot of units there. You're talking about these things practically going right outside their bedrooms, for crying out loud.
So it's hard to get anybody motivated these days. What kind of luck are you having? Do the folks know how damaging and negative and bad this is?
Each year that goes by on this project, and we are now 7 years into this proposal, the opposition continues to grow, and I'm surprised that it has lasted this long on both sides of it, actually. And each time that there is a public hearing on this, each time they take comments on it, the percentage of opposition just remains strong. When 80% of the people that show up to any of these public comment sessions speak out against the project, and the only ones who speak in favor of it are those who might benefit directly from it,
right.
And that is construction workers and companies
Do they try to have their people go and speak at these things?
Yes, they do.
Like, what do you call those kind of people? shills? I don't exactly know what the word is, but
yeah.
So... Wow, this is high.
They're not disinterested parties, let's put it that way. Because, I mean, look, let's face it. I have respect for the people that, you know, like especially the union workers that are looking for jobs. And I understand they want to be closer to home. And I understand it's their livelihoods to build things. Okay? I get that.
Yeah, but that's
a
temporary job to ruin the
well, that's it.
The heart of the state forever.
Yes, and we're talking about some of the most pristine landscapes, not only in New Hampshire, but in the country, too.
Yeah.
Once that is gone, you will never, ever get that back. Because land, they ain't making it anymore.
Right.
All right? So it's very important to stand strong on that, because these towers not only grow in height, but they also have babies. And there's usually more towers that are crowded into these rights of way.
How do you mean towers have babies?
Well, let's take a look at some proposals and how things have progressed over the years. This current Northern Pass proposal would go along some existing rights of way. Parts of the route is an existing rights of way where they already have three sets of power lines going through there. So they're going to have more towers going in.
Oh, okay.
So they keep expanding. And there's better ways to do this. If you really, really want this power from Canada, and you got to look at the source of the power, and there's a whole other conversation that can be had about that, and yeah. I wouldn't mind touching on some of that later.
All right.
But if you, there's better ways to do it, not these ugly overhead lines. You can bury the entire project. And there was a competing proposal. There is a competing proposal in Vermont called New England Clean Power Link. It has already been fully permitted and will start construction this year.
Environmentally, that's better, but still, as far as people being on the hook for stranded costs.
I'm not sure if that applies in that particular
case.
Oh,
different contract?
Yes. Yeah, well, you know why? Here's the difference. I'm glad you brought this up, because what Northern Pass has done is they're locked in with Hydro-Québec. It's a one-party deal. That's it.
Okay.
Whereas the New England Clean Power Link, the fully buried, fully permitted line that was actually proposed 2 years after Northern right. Pass, they are going to put their bids out on the open market. So anybody can bid to be part of that line. That's a big difference. That's using the free market enterprise.
Again,
as a conservative, I'm a free marketeer. That passes my test.
So you're down with that. You like that.
Yeah.
What's the good one called?
New England Clean Power Link.
Okay.
And that comes through Vermont. And it's, again, completely buried. You want to know how much opposition there was to that?
Probably not much.
Zero.
So why, with an alternative, first, there's the question of do we even need the power?
No.
Secondly, if we did, there's an alternative that won't ruin the touristic income received by Vermont and New Hampshire.
Right.
Why is this even on the table, this awful Northern Pass thing? Why hasn't it gone away on its own?
That is a good question. The reason why it hasn't gone away on its own is because the regulatory process and the approval process usually is tilted in favor of the applicants. And that's how it's been for many, many years. You got to remember, these utility companies, particularly Public Service Company of New Hampshire, doing business as Eversource, they have lots of lobbyists. Of all the lobbyists in New Hampshire, they have the largest group of lobbyists of any industry in the state.
So who do they lobby?
They lobby legislators, particularly senators.
And what do they offer?
It's just browbeating them all the time. They can't give them gifts because, you know, New Hampshire has very
something.
Strong...
They just browbeat them? If I was a legislator, I'd say, leave me alone. I don't feel like being browbeat.
Right.
I'm here to see legislator XYZ, and I would have my staff say, don't let that guy in.
Here's a little thing. New Hampshire has 400 members in the state House of Representatives,
wow.
which is virtually lobbyist-proof. But in the state Senate, there's only 24 members there. When you have 13 lobbyists who roam the state house day after day after day, they see these people.
You know them?
And they start talking. Yes,
there's
I do.
Only, there's
I
13 of them. You must know them. By.
I know a few of them. I don't know them all, but I've seen them working the hallways. When we fought the eminent domain protections, House Bill 648, back in 2011 and 2012, it took a year to get that through the Senate. It passed the House in record time. It was emergency legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Passed the House in a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
But when it got to the Senate, it got bogged down for a whole year because all 13 lobbyists came out of the woodwork and were just throwing all kinds of information at the senators to confuse them. And you had a few senators that were sitting on the fence. Well, finally, the Senate president at that time, Peter Bragdon, he threw all the lobbyists out and said, come on, senators, let's talk about what is right for the people of New Hampshire. Are you in favor of property rights or not? That bill ended up passing by a vote of 23-1. And the threats of eminent domain against property owners from this project all stopped immediately. It was an amazing, amazing feat.
I'd like to talk for the remaining 3 minutes just about the motivation for legislators to listen to these particular lobbyists. They have to be offering something, or they would just tell them to get lost. Everybody has to know.
Jobs, and tax revenue. That's what they keep promising. Jobs and tax revenue. And both of those figures are horribly inflated, and when you really start picking apart the details, it all falls apart.
But legislators have to know that they are not disinterested parties, and so I would think would dismiss whatever they would say. And
I agree.
And talk to somebody that does not have any skin in the game.
I agree with either you. Either way. And I hope that the people will contact the state legislators, particularly Senate President Chuck Morse, lives in Salem, New Hampshire, and Governor Chris Sununu. Governor Sununu has not been our friend on this proposal. Governor Sununu has been bought and paid for by the utility lobbyists. They were a lead sponsor for all three of his inaugural balls. And all the Eversource executives contributed to Governor Sununu's campaign.
Do you think that this will end up hurting him next time? Do people know?
Not enough.
Nobody cares?
For that.
Well, you need to get out there and make them know.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Why don't you run for office? You probably do.
Because I don't have a lot of money, and I need to work.
I don't know. How much does it take in New Hampshire to be
For a governor? You can't be a serious candidate for less than $4 million.
No, not governor.
Okay.
Something lesser. Or something.
State senator. You know what those smaller races are running now? 100,000 plus.
Yeah, unless you're smart.
You can be a state rep and run for maybe $200. But then you're one of out of 400 people. So
still? Yeah. Why don't you do it? Personally, you know.
They only pay $100 a year.
Okay, later
and
on.
And that doesn't pay my rent.
So what? We're going to talk about passion later, and this is clearly your passion.
Mm-hmm.
So be a state rep, and then next time when something opens up in the Senate, do that. You know, because you'll have some name recognition and everything. And you used to be on the radio, right?
I did.
Get back on the radio in the meantime.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Get back on the radio in New Hampshire, then as the race comes up, quit that, become a state rep, and then become a state senator when you're one of 14. And then, you know, it's your passion, man.
Let me answer one question if we have 30. Do we have 30 seconds?
You want to answer one or ask one?
I want to throw out a tidbit of information to answer a question you raised earlier. Do we need the power?
Yep. Do we need the power?
The answer is no. We have all the retiring power plants that people are talking about, the Pilgrim nuclear power plant that's set to go offline next year or 2019. That power has already been replaced. People using solar power, you know, the solar panels people are using on their home,
they're
making a difference. They've actually helped reduce energy usage in New England.
And you're a conservative. I just want to point out, everyone, if you just joined us, this is not some pie in the sky snowflake. This is a conservative. So, okay, don't need the folks. New Hampshire, listen to us.
We have to protect our
state.
You
could be on the hook for money, paying money for something you don't get, and your state could suffer greatly economically from a deterioration of your natural resources and your tourism.
Yep.
And it's all to satisfy about 13 lobbyists who are browbeating your legislators, and you need to keep close eye on your legislators.
Satisfy the executives in Hartford and Boston.
Keep a close eye on those legislators and see if they cave, and if they do, punish them. We'll continue with Bulldog Tilton in a moment on BZ.
Got plans this weekend?
And what's the weather report?
A look at the WBZ AccuWeather forecast.
Raindrops this weekend.
It's Saturday warmer.
Make sure you check the weather.
The upcoming weekend forecast.
We got the weekend.
WBZ's got the weekend.
We got the weekend.
And the coastline this weekend.
Every 10 minutes.
It won't rain this weekend.
Find out what the weather's going to be like this weekend from WBZ News Radio 1030.
Nice weather we're having.
Weather is good as they say.
It's better.
We got the weather all right.
What's the weather report?
63 degrees, and today we'll have a high around 70. Saturday, 66, and Sunday, 68. Let's check the rain factor. None, maybe a couple showers around midday tomorrow, today. Saturday, sun. Sunday, a little drizzle again. A little drizzle. I wouldn't change my plans based on the potential for a little drizzle. So we're with Brian Bulldog Tilton, passionate conservative, former talk radio show host, and Hooksett, New Hampshire Budget Committee member, and a guy I think ought to run for office. You know, there are a lot of people in the House of Representatives, but I'm sitting here and I'm a good judge of you would probably rise to the top really quickly. You know, well, you're
thank you.
Passionate, probably more than they are. You're better spoken, probably more than they are. You have your facts together, and I know that you don't make a lot of money, but you need to follow your passion, and this is clearly your passion. We're going to be talking about passion later on.
To your point,
yeah.
Senator Jeanne Forrester, who is a freshman senator at the time of that eminent domain protection bill that we put yeah. forward, she led the charge in the Senate. She was a freshman state senator, never held an elective office like that before.
Yeah.
And she's now head of the New Hampshire GOP. She ran for governor in the crowded primary last year.
Right.
And she just did phenomenal work
Good.
On passing that through. So you want to talk about passion, that's where your convictions can lead
Good.
You to when you stand to do the right thing.
Okay. So how much did you say it would cost to win a Senate seat?
At least $100,000 in many cases.
Okay.
Which
number
is a lot
one,
of
you
money
have
by
a state
New
party.
Standards.
If the state party backed you, you could get some money that way, right?
Well, the state party won't back you in a primary, but they will get involved in the general election. However, they're spread thin.
Okay.
Yeah, really, the party
and
doesn't
it wouldn't,
have that much money.
I mean, $100,000, it wouldn't take many checks for $20,000 to
right.
help you out.
I agree. But you know what? So many of these elections are funded by out of state, by interest groups.
Yeah.
And you can get into the whole money and politics issue, which I know a few things about that as well, because I worked for a group called New Hampshire Rebellion.
Yep.
And they did the marches throughout New Hampshire
yep.
and to raise awareness. You know, Granny D, the woman that walked across the country, that organization was inspired from her looking for campaign finance reform. But we ran these numbers, and looking at how these races are funded, it's insane how much money comes from out of state. I know the U.S. Senate race that we
but
just
had. But
that
doesn't change the $100,000 nut. It's still $100,000.
Right.
And I'm saying if you...
And it's where the money comes from. How much of it is coming from New Hampshire? Not a whole lot.
All right. So that said, you just need to get $100,000 somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you do it the old-fashioned way. I mean, you could, you know, a guy like you could master social media. I think you could cut down on the necessary funds. I actually think you could do it. And so what? If you
Possible.
Lose, so what? You
right.
know? You lost.
Yeah.
Next time you could win. I know you're not. I don't know if you're taking me seriously or not. But
I'm listening. I'm a good listener.
I'm dead serious.
I'm okay. a listener as well.
It could be done. Let's go to Ray in PA. Ray, how are you doing?
Hello.
Hello, Ray.
Hi, Ray.
I want to tell you, down here in Pennsylvania, they got gas companies that are trying to run lines through people's land, and they invoke eminent domain, and that they want to sell the gas to foreign countries. They want to get to Marcus Hook, which is at the Delaware River at the Edgeworth State, and eminent domain is not supposed to be to run your for-profit company through a venue where the people go, well, we don't want you going through my land. Eminent domain means for the benefit of the people who live in the area. And what they're trying to do, and so far they've got knocked down in round one, the people that own the land go, no, we don't want you building lines through our farm and confiscating our land. Okay, they won round one. But these people got all the money. They don't go away.
That's right. And that's absolutely right. And, Ray, we had the same similar fight in New Hampshire, and luckily this project did go away. And that was because of the funding mechanisms in the end. But, yeah.
The eminent domain threat went away in New Hampshire. Right?
No. The pipeline proposal
okay.
that was supposed to run through southern New Hampshire,
okay.
again, through some... right through people's yards. It was going to bisect
yeah, exactly.
their properties, take their houses.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So many people were going to be in this what's called an incineration zone. That
and,
just set everybody off
and,
nuts.
And I like when they
I
say...
I don't think they use a good
everything,
word.
I like when they say, everything will be safe and fine. No. And
but, yeah.
you're not supposed to be able to do it for profit to sell to a foreign country anyway.
What they do is they say that in order to justify the public good thing, they'll say that it generates more tax revenue than your cow farm.
And, no,
and so it's
that was the Kelo
good.
Case. That
Excuse
was the
me.
Basis of Kelo versus New London. It was that argument right there.
Yeah.
And you know what, Bradley? in Pennsylvania, the companies don't even pay any tax. The state legislature doesn't even tax them. They pay no tax. They pay an impact fee if they come into a neighborhood in rural Pennsylvania. And keep in mind, I live right outside of Philly. I'm not rural at all. But I pay attention to this stuff. They pay no tax except an impact fee. If they come in, your roads are little tiny roads and they got to bring in big equipment, they build up the roads and they call it an impact fee. They pay no tax.
So what are you going to do about it?
Me?
Yep.
I'm not. I'm an old man, and I live in Philly.
Yeah, well, you can vote, right?
I can vote, but it doesn't do no good in PA.
It doesn't. Are both sides for it? You would know the answer to that. Are both?
This is a Republican state.
Yeah,
they go right along with it, but the people that are fighting for their own land, so far they've protected themselves so far.
So much for Republican individualism. It's the Republican government that wants to take your land from you.
Mm. And eminent domain has nothing to do with it. It's not what eminent domain was meant to be.
That's right. Exactly. Eminent domain, and this is why the Kelo versus New London case was such a travesty in how they lowered the bar for uses of eminent domain. But a lot of states, Bradley, thankfully, made very strong eminent domain protections. We did it in New Hampshire twice. We did it by a constitutional amendment and then most recently with that state legislation to help bolster that constitutional amendment. I don't know what Pennsylvania has done. Sounds like they probably have more work to do.
Oh,
but Ray,
definitely.
Here's the problem that we faced in New Hampshire with our own gas pipeline proposal that fortunately did go away. And that is there's a federal law that allows these pipelines to use eminent domain despite what exists on the state level. That was a huge problem for us that a lot of people just really
couldn't. What does the law say?
I have to go back and think about that for a moment.
Just broad strokes.
the law basically says, you know, these pipelines, because it's something from decades ago, from actually the 1970s, and it just says that if a pipeline says, hey, we need to get this energy to market because of need, well, or any perceived need, then they can just come right in and take the land.
Wow.
So, good for the people of Pennsylvania for standing up to that, too.
Thank you for taking my call, Bradley.
Yes, and you don't call that much, and you should call more.
Hey, I'll tell you one thing.
Yes.
I call about the opium thing.
Yep.
And if you want to teach young people about opium, teach them about constipation, because that's what it does to you.
Thank you a lot, Ray. I appreciate it. We're going to try to stay right on this path here. New Hampshire, how does it break down, Republican, Democrat?
It's become a lot of more of a swing state recently. We've had these very wild swings over the last several years where you have these big Republican sweeps and then big Democrat sweeps. And it's kind of gone down in the middle. Out-of-state voters. I mean, really, we have a problem with out-of-state voters, the same-day voter registration taking advantage of it. And we actually just had some numbers released today that showed 94,000 registered voters in New Hampshire are registered in other states, 40,000 right here in Massachusetts. It's just crazy. Dual voter registrations.
It is crazy. What's up with that?
Yeah, we're trying to figure that all out. But people take advantage of the same-day voter registration, and you know what? New Hampshire allows them to vote. So when you hear talks of these busloads of people, it really doesn't seem to be that far from the truth.
So we think of New Hampshire kind of as a conservative state, but that's not true, right?
More libertarian, fiscally conservative. We're very adverse to an income or sales tax. We do like to have the low spending, although it's not really that low. Look at your property tax bills.
That's what I'm gonna say.
I know from my budget committee work, I see the numbers.
Sales tax, okay, fine, but you buy property there, they stick it to you.
They sure do. And so we have that, but then we're socially liberal. We like the government out of our lives. That's why we don't have a seatbelt law or a helmet law or mandatory auto insurance, abortion on demand. We have all that stuff. So and very free gun laws.
So that would
too.
Be socially conservative, right?
Generally speaking.
A liberal would say you got to wear a helmet.
You know what? They would, because when we look at any helmet laws and seatbelt laws that were proposed in New Hampshire, it's all been proposed by liberals. So, yeah, good point.
So, you live free or die in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah, we take that a little seriously.
Do you? Then why is it marijuana is illegal? How can you?
We're working on that. The House of
how can you say live free when you can?
Well, the state
weed is illegal.
Yeah. Well, the State House of Representatives did pass the marijuana decriminalization bill today, so now it goes to the governor.
Decrim. All right.
Yeah. So it just takes it down to a violation.
Think of the money that you're going to lose when we get our pot shops up and running here.
Oh, you're not kidding.
The dragon.
This is the one thing that Massachusetts may have gotten right.
They're dragging their feet on it. All right, let's take a break, and we'll continue with Brian Bulldog Tilton, perhaps future senator of New Hampshire. We'll see. It's WBZ.
So you can talk.
Yes, I can. I will and I do.
Bradley J.
Oh, when you listen early in the morning.
Jay talking.
You are locked up to WBZ.
WBZ News Radio 1030.
The radio wave, sir.
You know, it's the most peculiar thing about this place. There seems to be something here that stimulates the autobiographical impulse.
Radio waves.
All those radio waves.
We tune them on.
We're listening to a radio station.
Bradley J.
I speak Jay.
From nine till dawn.
Oh, looks like you've got a lot to talk over.
We're talking live.
Sit down, cold chap.
Midnight till five.
You brothers want to stay here all night?
In car or home.
Want to make a phone call?
Where that phone call?
Pick up.
In your ear. I'm on
air. Call 617-254-1030 to join in.
Jay Talks.
Jay Talking.
On
WBZ.
It's BZ, 62 degrees. We're losing a degree every 15 minutes here. Talking about what may be one of New Hampshire's biggest mistakes ever. This Northern Pass Power Project. Brian Tilton is with us, who is a spokesperson against it, a very effective spokesperson against it. And by the way, he's a conservative. We talked about how it would damage the tourism, and we talked about how folks might be on the hook for power that they never got because of a thing called, what is it, stranded costs?
Cost recovery, right.
Cost recovery. Because if they don't sell it and there's a certain amount that is guaranteed, they're still on the hook for it.
Right.
If the company puts it together is guaranteed a certain amount and that amount doesn't get made in sales of electricity, then they just have to pay.
That's right.
Okay. Now, third, do they even need the power?
No, they don't, and I'll explain why. There's going to be this talk, and you may even get some phone calls on this from people who say, but we're looking forward, into the years, into the future, and we're not going to have enough power to meet demands because power usage is up and yada, 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 because everyone's got the cell phones and whatnot. It's not true. At least in New England, it's not true. ISO New England, which is the independent system operator, they operate the power grid. They're the ones that ensure that when you flip that light switch, your lights come on and you can run all the neat things in your house that you enjoy with electricity. They're the ones that are in charge of making sure everything runs smoothly. They do something, what's called a forward capacity auction. They do this every year, and they're always looking several years down the road. And they have already looked past these power plants that are going offline, these coal fire plants, the Pilgrim nuclear plant here in Massachusetts, and that power has already been replaced.
Oh, that loss has been baked in.
Yeah, and here's why. They've increased generating capacity from existing power plants. There's three new plants that are going to be coming online during this time in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Connecticut.
What type?
Natural gas.
Yeah.
And then we have the solar panels. There's going to be some offshore wind and solar mixed.
How much of a difference does that make, solar and wind?
One
or 2% or more?
Actually, I think it's a little bit more than that. I know that 9% came from reductions in electricity demand, which is people just using less electricity, more energy efficiency in their homes because people have buttoned up their homes.
Remember, so that works, when we had the huh?
It does. It really does.
So insulation and the
and solar panels. People and the, using the solar panels on their houses contributed to this 9% reduction.
Wow.
So when people say, "Oh, my little solar panels may not make a big difference," yeah, they're making a huge difference.
Plus,
right,
switch
now
away from incandescent lights.
Yeah, perhaps.
Well, those are energy sappers, and if every family is used, you know how you burn lights in your house you don't need to.
Right.
I got to figure that.
I'm always turning off light switches in my house.
Okay. But it all matters, and it all added up to a 9% reduction.
Yes.
Okay.
So good job, folks. For those of you who are doing the solar panels and the energy efficiency measures in your home, you've made a tremendous impact. And these are real numbers. So what's happening is ISO New England is actually purchasing less electricity going into 20 and 21, you know, from this year's forward capacity auction than they did last year. And they still have over 1,700 megawatts in reserve, you know, for to meet the peak demand. You know, if we get 100 degree days in the summertime, you know, get one of those heat waves and everyone's turning on the air conditioning, they can meet that demand. So they have more than enough, which is a lot more than what Northern Pass is proposing to bring in of 1,090 megawatts. So that power already exists going forward into 2021.
So basically,
and it's cheaper. And it's cheaper now than it has been in probably 15 years.
So that's the third count why this is a bad idea. Number one, it's a scar across tourism.
Yes.
And the tourism dollars in New Hampshire.
And let's talk property values, too, and all that.
B. What was B?
That was the...
The on the hook for electricity.
Yep.
Have to pay for electricity even though you don't use it because...
The end user is going to pay.
Right. And you don't need it. And number four is what?
The effects on people's property values.
Yeah.
Because then other taxpayers have to pay for that because... The needs of government doesn't go away. You know, the what the people expect out of the government, the schools,
right,
the trash, the everything that goes on, the road maintenance. So when somebody gets asked for an abatement on their property tax bill because this ugly tower is ruining their view or it's standing 50 feet from their house,
yeah,
you know, they're going to want an abatement because it's made their property worth less.
Are they going to get it?
They probably will get it. They probably will get that abatement. So what that does is that spreads the tax burden out among everybody else.
They're going to have to prove that their property value has declined?
Oh, sure. You just bring in an assessor, and the assessor
you
says...
Say, you mean like an assessor, a tax assessor? Because they work for the
an
government.
An independent
what about
property
a,
appraiser,
yeah,
that
yeah,
kind
like
of
a
thing.
Real estate person that looks at comps, other places
yep.
that are under the power lines...
And you know what? Even your own town's tax assessor may look at it and say, okay, you're not worth this much.
I know what you're going to say. The revenue goes down from everyone under there, so everybody else has to make it up.
Yeah.
So property values...
Unless you cut the spending, which
is not going
to
happen.
Do. No.
So property values go down, and then other people's property taxes go up.
Yeah.
So that's really five. Five counts. I just don't get why legislators are even considering it. It's almost like malpractice as far as I can see.
The negative impacts on this far outweigh any perceived benefits from this. Two things on that, too.
You
look
at
the source of the power.
Yeah.
There is the source of the power way up in Canada where these massive dams are built where they flooded millions of acres of forest. That's creating poisonous mercury in the water and creates a tremendous amount of CO2. Now, for those who believe in global warming and CO2 is a contributor to that global warming theory, hey, guess what? These hydropower projects are creating more CO2 into that atmosphere. Then the second thing is the indigenous people, or as we call them around here, Indians. There's a tribe, Pessimit Innu, is directly impacted. They've seen the salmon population wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that is their lifeblood of thousands of years, and this project would only make that problem even worse and may virtually cause that to be extinct.
If I'm a strategist, I'm going to say, don't bring up the climate change, don't bring up the salmon. You have enough financial reasons, and if you bring those other things up, you could get tossed on the pile of, you know, tossed into the climate change world, which might hurt your credibility. That's just me.
Again, that's why I said, if you subscribe to the climate change theory.
If you're a person who subscribes to that, You don't even need that because you're already an environmental person.
No, I agree. And here's the thing.
Yeah.
Again, this is the point for most of your listeners to understand, especially those in Massachusetts. Hydro-Québec has put out two statements, and we talked about this before last time I was on with you.
3 minutes.
They said that we will not pay 1 cent for construction of this line on the American side. The American ratepayers will pay for it through their electricity bills. Folks in Massachusetts, you need to be aware what's happening right now. There is an RFP that's been out there. It started in April to get these long-term power contracts with Hydro-Québec and the state of Massachusetts to bring in this power. This is a bad deal for ratepayers. And this month, it begins with the offshore wind. Be careful of these long-term power contracts.
Right.
They are often not good for consumers, and they are anti-competitive markets.
Send this project the way of the Olympics in Boston. And keep, I have to say, you got to keep an eye on those. You got to send those lobbyists home, and if they don't go home, then you got to send your legislators home. Okay,
yeah.
If this goes south for you guys,
don't be taken advantage of
by big business. Hey, you're a good guest, Brian Bulldog Tilton.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate this time.
Absolutely. 617-254-1030. We have another mystery guest. Not a mystery guest. It's going to be a mystery until he comes here. Until he dials in at 2 o'clock. And in the meantime, it's just going to be open lines. No politics. No politics tonight. It's any more than we've had already. And a couple of really easygoing things. We had John Garabedian in here, a radio god. And he has a book, The Harmony of Parts. And it is basically about recognizing what your passion is and doing something about it, getting involved with it. Not necessarily a job, but just doing it. One of the things that we could talk about during the open line session is just, what is your passion? What is it? Let's just, in order to actualize, we need to identify the passion. You all know you got something. Is it cooking? Is it making your own pasta? Is it gardening? Is it, in my case, I have this new thing, leather working. I'm nuts about it. I don't know why. Is it something else? Is it politics like Brian Bulldog Tilton? Think about what it is and maybe share that with me. And then I have a couple other tricks up my sleeve, too. It's WBZ News Radio, 1030. Mark Lavallo is with us, producing the show, and I'm here, the host. You're Jay talking.